You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
All right, it is Wednesday, and on Wednesdays we do battlefield study, and we do the old core talks. And the old core, most of the time when it talks about leadership, and NCO leadership has been the focus of that. So without further ado, Jim Bathurst joined the Marine Corps when he dropped out of high school without a diploma, rose from the ranks private to gunnery sergeant, and then was commissioned. He served as a sergeant, served as a squad leader and a rifle platoon commander in Vietnam. And then after he was commissioned, served as from second lieutenant to colonel. So without further ado, Jim Bathurst here on a Wednesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. All right, fastly becoming my favorite segments is two segments. One is called Battlefield Studies, and the other one is the one you're about to hear. You're about to hear the second one, and what will be a long line of the old core speaks. And I wanted to do it because I wanted to focus on NCO leadership, and so I had Mike Musselman do the first one last week, And the other guy I wanted to come on right at the start of doing these is Jim Bathurst, Sergeant B, as he likes to be called, but a retired Marine Colonel, Jim Bathurst, and he joins us today. So, Jim, first of all, before we go any further, thanks for doing this.
Oh, you're welcome, Mac. You're welcome.
All right.
I enjoy it.
Well, you know, you can tell I do a little bit too. So it's always fun to do this and talking leadership. I think is a passion for both of us. You're still in the leadership business with the young Marines, and so I know it excites you. But before we get going too far, why don't give everybody kind of a thumbnail of your career in about 2 or 3 minutes?
In May of 1958, I got out before the report cards came out. Or in March of 1958, I got out before the report cards were to come out in May because I knew I wasn't going to graduate. And I left school and enlisted in the Marine Corps and went to Parris Island, South Carolina. Survived that. And then I just had various jobs as an enlisted Marine. I was a 2531, as it turns out. That's the MOS I got. And spent a short tour at Quantico, Virginia, and schools demonstration troops. And from there, I took an overseas assignment to Marine Barracks Yokosuka, Japan, and that was what got me. I spent 2 years there. Came back from there and went to Delta Battery, 2nd Battalion, 10th Marines. I was a corporal at that time, and I was a senior corporal, so I was a radio chief. And from there, I wound up going on the drill field to Parris Island for 2 years, left there, went up to OCS as a sergeant instructor, and then went back to schools demonstration troops, but I worked my bowl with the battalion sergeant major and got to go to a line company instead of going back to comm company. Because I was destined to change my MOS to 03. I didn't want to be a tip of spam anymore. And then I left there, went to Vietnam, came back from Vietnam, went to Marine Barracks, 8th and I, Washington, D.C. I was a gunnery sergeant. After I got there, I was meritoriously promoted to gunnery sergeant from Vietnam. And then 4 months later, I was awarded a combat commission from Vietnam. And that started my officer career. And throughout my officer career, I had various assignments. I had more than my share of command jobs, which I'm very, very, very thankful for. And I had the recruiting station in Chicago. I was a SEAL of Marine Barracks Lemoore, California, and a couple other assignments. I think during my whole officer career, I think I had a staff job twice, which amounted to about a year, I think. So I was very fortunate to have as many command assignments as I had. My last command was CO of School of Infantry East at Camp Geiger, North Carolina. I retired in 1993, just short of 36 years.
How long were you there?
Where?
At SOI East.
It was a two-year tour, but it got shortened because I retired.
Okay.
I did not get along with my boss, and I just decided I'd had enough. I was burned out. There's nothing fun about being a colonel of Marines. I just decided it was time for me to leave the Corps and let everybody else worry about women in combat and gays in the military and transgenders and all that bullshit. I didn't want to deal with it. So I retired.
All right. And what are you doing now? Tell everybody what the Young Marine Program is about and how you're connected to it.
The Young Marines, for those of you listening to this, don't know anything about it, you can Google it. The website is youngmarines, all one word, .com. It's a national nonprofit 501c3 organization. They have about 300 units throughout the United States. They have one in Hawaii, and there's also one in Okinawa. It's for boys and girls ages 8 to 18 or high school graduation, whichever comes last. The motto of the organization is strengthening the lives of America's youth. It's not the Boy Scouts, or it's not the Sea Cadets, or all those organizations. We follow the Marine Corps training philosophy. We use the Marine Corps rank structure, private through Master Sergeant. They actually go through a boot camp. It's a 26-hour syllabus that we have to teach them. It's not, you know, a Marine boot camp. In fact, the Young Marines don't like us using that term. They'd rather we call it recruit training, but I'm kind of hooked in the word boot camp, so that's what I use. It goes from private to master sergeant. The ranks of sergeant major and first sergeant are billets. Nobody's promoted to those ranks. They hold the rank within the unit. But it's just a great organization. It teaches them discipline, community service. It's just a great organization. If you've got a young child between the ages of 8 and 18, I'd strongly recommend looking into it. It's really a good organization. I run Fox Valley Young Marines out of Elgin, Illinois. We got about 30 kids in it now. I've been running it now for 2 years. The unit commander has to be a Marine. He either has to be former, active, or retired. No one else in the unit needs to be a Marine except for the unit commander. But it's just a great organization. It really is. I love these kids. Had a mother come up to me one time and say, "Do you know what Dharma calls you at home?" And I thought, "Oh." And I said, "What's that?" And she says, "Grandpa Colonel." I look at him as somebody asked me one time how many grandkids Nancy and I had, and I said, "Well, I used to have 9, but now I got 39. I guess it's my way of paying back.
Hey Jim, let me ask you: is it designed to be a stepping stone into the Marine Corps, or is it designed to teach Marine Corps values to young people? That anybody would join and gain a lot out of it.
We are not, one thing I caution people that send me inquiries about it, we are not a recruiting tool for the Marine Corps. In fact, they don't want us to bring in Marine recruiters to talk to them or anything else. But, you know, it goes without saying, and I don't know what percentage, but there is a percentage that end up joining the military, and out of those that join the military, I would say the vast majority go into the Marine Corps. Out of my 30 kids, I've got about five that my senior young Marine is a female corporal by the name of Amanda, and her desire in life is to be a woman Marine, and she would make a great woman Marine. But it just teaches, honesty, integrity, leadership. They're taught the 11 principles of leadership. They're taught the leadership traits. They're taught how to drill. They're taught flag etiquette. They're taught community service. They are encouraged to do community service. In fact, when they get 50 hours of community service, there is a ribbon that they can get. So the youth of today are not taught a lot of things in school. I'm kind of surprised by the number of kids. We start off every drill we have with the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag, and they have to learn the national anthem verbatim. And I'm surprised with the number of kids when I see new ones coming in for a drill that are kind of they're kind of lip syncing the Pledge of Allegiance because they don't know it. And I think that's a shame, but it's just a great organization. It really is. There is a credo that they have to adhere to about, honoring their parents, honoring their God, honoring their country. It just makes them a stalwart young kid that perhaps learning things that they don't learn in the schools of today.
All right. So if anybody that's listening to this is interested in getting involved in that and giving back like you're doing right now, go ahead and search on Young Marines, and they'll go ahead and find it.
Yeah, you can go onto the Young Marines website. Again, it's youngmarines.com, and you'll find a link there that says Find a Unit. And you click on that, and you put in your zip code, and it'll show you all the units that are currently up and running within miles of your zip code.
Okay. All right. So there you have it, Young Marines. I want to. We're going to talk about NCO leadership today. Something that you lived. And by virtue of the way you could do it, you were awarded a commission. And in your career. But before we talk about that, I want to talk about the contribution that NCOs make to the structure of a company. Because I don't know that until you understand what they do in a company, I don't know that you know how you fit in. So I hope that makes sense. Can you explain, with all the different commands that you've held, and a few companies or detachments, what do NCOs contribute to the larger functioning of the company?
Excuse me.
Yeah.
Well, they're it, Mac. They're where the rubber meets the road. Whether you're a battalion commander or a company commander, and you walk through the, back in my day, the squad bays. And today, I guess you go look through the rooms and you say, this shithole, this place looks like a shithole. I want a field day tonight.
Right.
And, you tell that to your next junior officers and say, well, just say company level. The company commander says, I want a field day tonight. And he tells, the lieutenants, we're going to have a field day at 1800 extra chow. So it trickles down to the platoon sergeants, and the platoon sergeants, call the squad leaders in and say there'd be a field day tonight at 1800. And then at 1800, the NCO says, all right, get off your ass. This place looks like a shithouse. We're going to clean it up. I mean, he's the guy or she, if it's a woman-oriented organization, they're the ones, they're the doers. They're the ones that make things happen. Everybody else are the planners and they look at the bigger picture. The sergeant, the corporal don't look at the bigger pictures. They're down where the rubber meets the road. They're the ones that tell people what to do, when to do, what to wear, what not to wear, when to go, when not to go. I mean, they're the doers. And they know their young, they know their Marines. I don't have much experience with I don't have much experience with the room, situation. I only had one command where we had rooms, and that was Marine Barracks, Lemoore, California. My younger NCO days, it was squad days. Everybody had a rack and a wall locker in the squad bay, even the brown baggers. They still had a rack and a wall locker in the squad bay because they would have duty on certain nights and they'd have to have a place to sleep. They're there all the time. So they know their Marines. They should know everything there is to know about them. Is their mother and father still alive? Do they have any siblings? What's their hobbies? What they should know everything there is to know about that Marine, as though he's a brother, because that's what he is. I've said this often, as a major, lieutenant, colonel, I'd have young sponges, second lieutenants, that would ask me, say, sir, during a beer at the bar or something or whatever, and they'd say, sir, you've been a private through gunnery sergeant and a second lieutenant through whatever rank I was at the time. What was the best rank you ever had? And I never hesitated. I said, sergeant. And they look at me and they say, sergeant? And I'd say, yes. Why a sergeant? I said, because that's when I had fun. I was with Marines. I was close to them. I knew everything about them. I trained them. I taught them everything they knew. I loved them, as if they were my own kids. And the higher up in rank you go, you move away from that. There's insulators between you and them, and you don't get to know them as well as you'd like to know them. Lieutenant asked me once, I would think you'd say colonel, and I'd say, shit, there ain't anything fun about being a colonel. In fact, it sucks. I was, my happiest days in the Marine Corps was when I was a sergeant and a corporal. Everything else, higher up in rank, I had other things that I had to worry about. But when I'm a sergeant and corporal, I only got one thing to worry about, and that's my Marines. They're my responsibility.
All right. So in the context of that structure, I want to walk you through. I want to ask you about what you think are the most important qualities for NCOs, and then I want to walk you through just a day. I'm going to make you a brown bagger, so I'm going to make you commute to work, and how life works. So talk to me about what you believe are the most important qualities of a Marine. It'll be any Marine leader, but specifically talking about NCOs.
Well, I think, I'd have to go back and start quoting the 11 principles of leadership and the 14 traits. Every one of them is important. Know your men, look out for their welfare. Well, knowing your men is a lot more than what some people would think it is. You got to be technically proficient. You got to be good at what you do. You need to be better than what you than everybody else. You need to do. You might not be able to do more pull-ups than everybody else, but nobody should beat you in your PFT score. You know, you you know, if you're in a weapons platoon, you got to know those weapons inside out, backwards, not only how to tear them apart, put them back together and maintain them, but how to employ them. You know, you just have to be, you know, I hate to keep harping on the 14 traits and 11 principles, but that's the key to the whole thing. It's really hard to explain. I mean, as far as what my day would consist of is reveille usually went at 6 o'clock.
Okay.
You know, back in those days, and I was in there by 5. You know, I'm the guy that turned on the lights in the squad bay when reveille went. As a former DI, I didn't, you know, pick up a trash can and throw it down the middle of the squad bay, but I was there getting people out of the rack PFC Finicnik, probably had too much to drink last night, and so he's kind of, you know, doesn't want to get out of the rack. Well, you know, you got to get him out of the rack, you got to get him moving, that's how my day started. And, while they're showering and shaving and getting dressed and everything else, I might walk over to the company office and go to the duty NCO, who was about to get relieved by the first sergeant. And I'd look through the logbook and I'd see if, you know, any of my Marines' names were in the logbook for a variety of reasons. Talk to the first sergeant, see what the plan is for the day. I mean, I already knew what the training schedule said, but, you know, he might throw something at us, that's not in the training schedule. Maybe the company formation is going to last longer than what it normally lasts, because he might have a lot of word to pass or whatever. And then I'd go back over to the squad bay and back in those days, we marched a chow. So, you know, fall outside for chow at usually around 6:30, 6:45, and say I was, a platoon sergeant, I would, I'd have one of the squad leaders march him over to the chow hall. I mean, I was a former drill instructor. I didn't need training in how to march people, but my young NCOs did. And I'd go have chow with the troops. They straggle back to the squad bay and they get ready, you know, clean it up, get the trash cans emptied and everything else, and turn out the standing lights before the regimental CO comes around and yells at you for not turning out your standing lights.
Leave General Van Riper out of this.
Yeah, you're right. And then we'd have a formation.
That's typically
how the morning went.
All right, so all of that before you even, you know, you see the platoon sergeant, or he may stick his head in, right, and say, hey, what's going on,
mm-hmm.
All of that is the work that you do just to make sure your guys are ready to go, when that formation, that whenever your formation is 07 or whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
Can you conceive of how things would run if guys don't show up to do that? That everybody's on their own and you kind of show up at formation and that's when people find out what's going on?
Well, you know, I saw those kind of NCOs when I was young and coming up, but you know, and you can pick the unit out. When you see a unit like that, you know, they're the last ones out of the barracks to get in formation because nobody's in there kicking their ass out to get them outside. And you know, a formation goes at, and the formations usually went around 7:30 or, you know, sometimes it'd be 8 o'clock. So
right.
We'd be outside when colors went.
Right.
I always had my people out there earlier. You know, I believed in Lombardi time. You know, if the man says 0800, I had him out there 15 minutes early, or maybe 10 minutes early. You know, and of course that's the old joke in the Marine Corps. You know, the company commander says they want a formation at 8 o'clock. So the gunny says, platoon sergeant, you know, I want a formation at 7:45. And so the platoon sergeant tells the squad leaders, I want a formation at 7:30. You know, and the old joke about standing around, you know, waiting, right. waiting, you know, I mean, that's how that happens. But, you know, I didn't pay much attention to that. I wanted them outside because this is the first time that I got them in formation, except for the chow formation, and I might have some work to pass. And, you know, when their bellies are rolling and they want to get to chow and get something in their stomach, I don't want to delay them in doing that. So I would have my time out there with the unit, telling them what, you know, what I wanted to do. And I'd also just, you know, you don't need to hold a formal inspection, open ranks and all that stuff. You just look. Just open your eyes and look around. You know, hey, that's a nicknick. Your right trouser ain't bloused. You know, you know, you got your cover, you know, fix your cover. It looks like shit. It looks like a, you know, fart sack with a hula hoop.
Okay, so I wanna ask you this. I mean, as much as we make fun of that, okay, you know, one of the things I learned as I spent more time in the Marine Corps, there was tremendous wisdom in the things that I had been taught and the things that I had been told, and I was probably too young to really understand the wisdom behind them. You know, that, you know, when you're supposed to step off in the attack, In Vietnam, in Iraq, Afghanistan, the places that you and I have been collectively, and it's important that you cross the line of departure because other people depend on you. You can't be late, and it's those no. It's that daily 15 minutes early, 10 minutes early, stand around and wait. That's where getting raised like that comes from. Being on time. If it's supposed to go at this time, it's going at this time. By hook or crook, it is going at this time. And so to me, I don't know how it works if you don't do that. And I like you, I've seen sloppy units. And they do stuff like that. And again, the sad part, and I think we know, when you see undisciplined units in combat, and I'm sure you saw them in Vietnam, you know, you just shake your head because you know they're going to suffer more casualties. And
absolutely.
And so I that to me is the frustrating part of you know, either saying, oh, yeah, that's just chicken shit Marine Corps, we don't do that, or not embracing the discipline that you have to have while you're a Marine. And if you don't embrace it, you are hurting your Marines.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, you know, one of my favorite sayings is punctuality is a virtue. You know, and I learned that very young as a corporal when I went to Paris Island as a drill instructor. You know, you have a training schedule, a daily training schedule, and if you're supposed to be at classroom such and such at 0900, that instructor's in there waiting for you. He's been there 15 minutes early getting his slides set up and everything else.
Right.
You have to be there at 0900. They're, you know, and not right at 0900. He's supposed to start his class at 0900. And you get chastised by these regimental instructors and by everybody else if you're late. Now, for example, I was in 2nd Recruit Training Battalion, and judo was held down at the Lyceum, which is down near the old boat docks. Well, how long does it take me to march a platoon of 75 recruits down Panama Street, stopping at every intersection, put out road guards, march across, halt, bring the road guards back in, because, you know, the black flag's up, you can't have them running. And there's, you know, there's 511 cross streets there. So how long does it take me to march from our barracks at 2nd Battalion down to the Lyceum? It might take me 20 minutes. Well, my class is supposed to start at 9 o'clock. I got to be there and ready to go at 9 o'clock. And, you know, that's where I learned that punctuality is virtue. Because you caught holy hell if you were ever late for a class. I mean, you followed that training schedule right down to, if you were supposed to be at chow at 1843 at the mess hall, you had to be there at 1842 or 1841, no earlier and no later, because another unit would go to chow before you. And if you got there too early, then that meant that you were blocking other units from coming down Panama Street to get into the mess hall that were supposed to eat chow before you. So you weren't allowed to be there early. You had to be there to march into chow at 1843. So I learned that very, very early in my career that, by God, when somebody says 8 o'clock, they don't mean 8:05. They mean 8 o'clock. And they want to start at 8 o'clock. They don't want to start at 8:05 while you march your unit into the classroom or anything else. So DIs are taught that, it's drilled into their head, constantly that punctuality is a virtue. And it's a virtue that you don't have it, you're unacceptable.
Okay. Now, what I want you to do is, you've been both a squad leader and a platoon commander in combat in Vietnam. All right. A lot of people hear that kind of stuff. I think a lot of young Marines hear it, and they kind of roll their eyes and like, look, I'm not in boot camp anymore. I'm in the fleet. I'm part of the operating forces now. Enough of the chicken shit. How does that kind of discipline translate to going to war?
Well, you know, what you do in garrison is what you're going to do in war. You know, I was listening to Mike's interview you had with him last week, and I could not disagree with anything that he said. You know, the old saying about, you know, the more you sweat in training, the less you bleed in combat. I mean, that's a cliche, but there's truth to it. I mean, you know, like Mike said, there's not a switch. You know, you don't load aboard a ship and sail off to some foreign land and then put on your combat gear, go down and get in the Amtrak or go down the ropes. I don't think they do that anymore, into the Peter boats.
No.
And Mike boats. But you get in a helicopter and you launch, there isn't a switch that somebody comes over and turns on, you know, you're in combat now. So what you do in combat and what you do in peacetime is a direct relation to what the hell you're going to do in wartime. I mean, I am a big believer. I am a very, very big believer, in drill. Close order drill.
Why? You know, a lot of people hear that and just roll their eyes like, oh, God.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Explain to me the link between drill and discipline and combat.
Oh, my God. Well, I still have my 1961 landing party, or 1960 copy of my landing party manual. Now, the Marine Corps has come out with they have a new manual. They don't follow the LPM much anymore.
Right.
It's the Marine Corps drill ceremony thing. Well, do you know what the old LPM listed? There's two purposes for drill. Contrary to popular belief, to move a unit from point A to point B is number two. Do you know what's number one?
I think it's to instill good order and discipline. Yeah.
No, discipline. The immediate response to a verbal command. And I'm telling you, I have proven it time and time and time and time again that you go into a unit in peacetime and they're you know, they dress improperly, they're slovenly, there's a sign of lack of discipline. Find out when the last time they had some close order drill. They probably haven't. You know, you get a unit out, formation goes at, say, 0800. What's wrong with 0800 to 0900 close-order drill? Now, you know, people say, oh, my God, drill, I learned that in boot camp and everything else. But it's immediate response to a verbal command. And that doesn't mean a guy like me, a former drill instructor, gets out to, you know, takes him out for an hour and marches him around the parade deck. Great deck, you know, exercising my cadence from my days on the drill field and everything. I don't need that shit.
Right.
I know it.
Right.
You let the squad leaders drill them. You let other NCOs, you know, fire team leaders, you let them drill them. You break them up into squads and let them drill them. And you throw a little fun stuff in it, some fancy drill and everything else. And you do some drill movements that nobody does. Form for shelter tents to the right. When the last time a unit did that? You know, I mean, form for physical drill. There's a movement for it.
Right.
And it's an immediate response to a verbal command. So I am a very, very I mean, if you read my book and you read about Marine Barracks Labor, the worst outfit I ever saw in my Marine Corps career when I checked in there. I mean, the stories that I tell in that book about Marine Barracks Labor, people don't believe it. But they hadn't had drill in over a year. I mean, I asked the armorer, when was the last time the rifles were checked out for drill? I just asked him out of nowhere. He said, sir, I don't remember. I said, how long you been the armorer? He said, 2 years. You know, so, you know, we started doing formal guard mounts. We started doing parades. We started, you know, we had a sound system. And, I mean,
okay, all right. So let me, what you're talking to me, what you're describing is the structure of the Marine Corps, right? It's not just showing up,
yeah,
you know, at 6:50 for a 07 formation, seeing your guys like at that point, and then everybody okay, and seeing that their uniforms are jacked up. What you're describing for me is the structure of the discipline, and I want to ask you, you see now young people that come in that are part of Young Marines. Some of those people go into the Marine Corps, but you also, I'm sure, see other high school students. And I have a high school student still in my family, my daughter, who's 14. Do you think there's a greater requirement for structure in the lives of young people today, or is it less of a requirement?
It's less, much less. Mac.
No. Is there need greater?
Is there a need? Absolutely. I mean, absolutely. You know, some of our schools are just, you know, I have a, as Nancy's daughter teaches school, I've taught school for 11 years, you know, in this one school in the suburbs, of where we live. And the structure is not there at all. Nothing. I mean, what our kids are learning today and what teachers are having to put up with and what they're having to do. I mean, if the average parent had any clue as to what's going on in their school, they'd be shocked. Absolutely shocked. I mean, you know, our daughter, there isn't a day goes by where she isn't told, fuck you.
At school.
By a student. A seventh grader. You know, a student comes into her class wearing her ear pods. She's listening to music. She tells a student to take them off. And the student says, fuck you. I mean, can you imagine that? I mean, our schools today, there is no structure to them at all. Now, nothing's 100%, not even Ivory Soap. So, you know, I'm not saying that all schools are like that, but there are so many schools that are just, I don't know how you can even call them a school. I mean, what the hell are people learning?
So, and it's from that reservoir that young people join the Marine Corps. So to me, I came from a world that, you know, I went to a Catholic school. I mean, I was no stranger to discipline, right? I played sports. My coaches were World War II and Korean War veterans, and the young guys when I was a kid were in Vietnam. I'm a little bit younger than you, and so but I grew up in a relatively disciplined world. The Marine Corps wasn't that big of a shock for me, and so, you know, if you can consider a kid that doesn't go into that, that goes to boot camp, and then goes to operating forces where that structure doesn't exist, that kid needs that.
Doomed.
Yeah, that kid
Doomed.
Needs, that unit needs it, Doomed. that young Marine needs it. That structure is their friend, and it certainly is their friend in combat. Pre-combat checks, checking your uniform, checking your buddy's uniform before your team leader or squad leader walks in, so that you're good to go. You're ready to go out there and get after the enemy, you know, when you're supposed to LD. All that stuff is the product of the structure of our discipline and the things you're describing, whether it be close order drill or showing up early. That's the structure where the rubber meets the road. The guys who are the foreman, right? Other, as you said, other people plan it, other people supervise it, but the NCOs, they're the foremen. They do it.
Yeah.
And so
I
don't know how it exists if you don't do those things. And I shake my head when I hear units that struggle with it. And what about the promotion? You hear a lot that the promotion from Lance Corporal to Corporal is the most difficult promotion in the Marine Corps. Do you buy that? Do you believe that?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Why?
Absolutely. I don't know how it is today, but you know, a quick story. You know, I was a Lance Corporal at Marine Barracks Yokosuka, Japan. I was working in a brig. We were the last red line brig in the Far East.
Explain to everybody real quick what red line means.
Oh, you know, there's lines painted on the deck, all through the compound. The entrance to inside, the entrance to the head, and there's one long line in the center, line 13. That's where they fell in, when they got out of the rack in the morning for a head count. And during certain times, they were control features. They were during certain times, that the prisoner had to request permission to cross the line. You know, I remember very well, you know, for a prisoner to go, he wanted to go out into the compound, and he'd say, sir, duty turnkey, sir. And you'd say, what? And he'd say, sir, prisoner 89 requests permission to cross red lines 13, 10, and 5. Those are the three lines that he had to cross to get outside into the compound. They were control, you know, strictly control measures. But anyway, you know, when I was in security section, as a PFC, I was in port security section, working my bolt, trying to the gate to be on the main gate was numero uno. You were hot shit if you were a gate sentry. And we got this kid in by the name of Lance Corporal Bartha. Billy Bartha. And I was 19? Billy Bartha was 34 years old, married with two children. He had gotten, spent some time in the Marine Corps, got out, came back in the Marine Corps because he was okay age-wise. So here he is. He's, I think he was 33. He's 33 years old, you know, I'm 19, and he's a Lance Corporal. And Billy and I became the best of friends. Now, back in those days, you had to be a corporal over four to bring your dependents, on an overseas assignment, like to a Marine barracks. Okay. Well, he was over four, but he wasn't a corporal. So he paid to have his family, his wife and two daughters, come to Japan, and they got a little shack out in town. And Billy and I became really good friends. He was probably my best friend in port security section. He'd invite me out to his house, for dinner, you know, at least twice a month. I knew his kids well. I knew his wife well. And so I get transferred to the brig. And I make Lance Corporal. My section leader, Corporal Below, as things happen, you know, this is months later, Corporal Below gets selected to be a duty warden. So I'm selected to be the port brig section leader. I'm in charge of port brig section. I'm a Lance Corporal. Well, you know, I'm walking to chow one day from the barracks. The brig was about, you know, a click or so from the barracks. So I'm walking to chow one morning. Bartha catches up with me and he goes, hey, Bathurst. He says, now we're both Lance Corporals. Bathurst, I had an interview yesterday afternoon with Captain Reed from, who was the guard section leader, the guard officer. And he says, they're transferring me to the brig. I'm going to be down here with you. And I'm thinking to myself, fuck. So I eat chow. I go down to the brig. We take over, from starboard section at 12 noon. So I go down there early, you know, and I knock on Gunny Cobb's door, the brig warden. And he said, come in. And I said, Gunny, going to talk to you a minute. He goes, yeah. And he was one of my heroes. And I said, I think I got a problem coming up. And he said, what's that? And I said, I just got the word that this, very good friend of mine, Lance Corporal, Billy Bartha, is being transferred to the brig. And I said, you gotta understand, Gunny, He's a very good friend. He's probably my best friend up in security section. And I said, is there any way that perhaps, when he comes here that he can be put in starboard section? Gunny leaned back in his chair and said, and why is that? I said, cause he's a good friend. And we're both Lance Corporals. He kind of rocked back in his chair and he said, well, let me tell you something, Bathurst. He said, I suspect you're going to be a career Marine. And by then I had determined I was going to be. And I said, yes, sir. And he said, you're going to run into this many, many, many times in your career. And you're going to have to learn to deal with it right now. Yes, Bartha was going to go to starboard section. But since you brought this up, I'm going to put him in port section. So here comes Bartha, who's what? 12 years my senior, in age-wise, and he comes to port section. I'm his boss. I learned very early in my career about, you know, the difference between friends and your Marines. Did I have trouble with Bartha? Absolutely. I had lots of trouble with him. But we worked it out. And we got it straightened out. So, you know, I mean, I was still his friend. I didn't go out to his house for dinner anymore after I was his boss. I didn't do that. But, you know, I was still a friend of his, but now I'm his leader. I'm responsible for him. I'm responsible for his training how to be a brig guard. And I already knew everything about him. There wasn't much I could learn about him from our time in security section. But, you know, so I learned a lot of things as a Lance Corporal that when it came time to become a corporal, I was ready to be a corporal. I was ready to be a corporal. And I don't know if that happens today. I don't know because I'm out of touch with what's going on in the Marine Corps. In those days.
We get promoted, much faster now, right? I mean, we went to other services standards of, you know, time for promotion and things like that. So I remember when my guys would go from corporal to sergeants, they were chomping at the bit to be sergeants. They wanted, it wasn't like, geez, I'm not sure if I'm ready for this. They were snarling and yapping to be sergeants. I could be a sergeant. I know I can. I've acted as one before.
Yeah.
I've been a corporal for now, you know, 3 years going on four. You know, I've been in the Marine Corps for, I don't know, five or six. And I'm ready to be a sergeant. I want to be one.
Back in those days, Mac, I was already a corporal. I was the section leader of Port Bridge section. So I was already a corporal except for one thing. I didn't have the stripes. I mean, back in those days, I think you had to prove that you were already a sergeant. All you needed was the promotion. You needed the stripes to wear on your sleeve or on your collar. And I don't know if that's the same way today.
Right.
I just don't know. Being a corporal and a sergeant, my God, is the most fun thing I've ever done in my life. I mean, I told you, at our last interview that I was talking about, I was thinking about writing a book called Only a Sergeant.
Right.
And I'm still toying with the idea. If I can get, I don't want to write the book. I want other people to write the book. Well, sergeants rule. I mean, they it's just hard to explain to somebody unless they've not been in that position. But, you know, I did get a couple people send me in things. And this is a great story. I'll leave the names out, but there was a squad leader, and it was at Quantico, Virginia, and even the Marines of Marine Barracks, 8th and I, have to qualify every year. So, but they actually moved to the rifle range and lived at the rifle range during that week. So there's this squad leader, and it's pre-qual day, So, and he's not the platoon sergeant now, understand. He's a squad leader in a platoon. So, but this guy's got initiative, see? So he, after firing's over that day, he said, everybody that fired marksman or unqualified, get over here. Everybody in the platoon. So they all go over there, and the platoon sergeant just standing there watching. And he says, I want everybody at the 500-yard line berm at 1800 after, or 1830 after chow. So he gets them out there, 1830, they're all there. He's got them all in a school circle at the berm, and he's got a clipboard with lots of pieces of paper and magic markers in his hands, and he's going over sight alignment and sight picture, the difference between the two. And the lieutenant, who isn't living at the range, he's living in the BOQ. So he's on his way from the mess hall of the car, and he sees, we'll call him Sergeant Bennett. He sees Bennett standing up there with a pretty good chunk of the platoon around him. So he yells out, hey, Bennett. He don't pay any attention to him. So he yells out, Bennett just keeps on teaching his class. So he yells out really loud this time, Bennett! Bennett still don't pay any attention to him. So he just keeps one of the Marines says, hey, Sergeant Bennett, the lieutenant's one. You don't pay any attention. Keep. So the lieutenant just screams at the top of his lungs, Bennett! And Sergeant Bennett slowly turns around and he goes, Lieutenant, there ain't a Bennett up here, but there's a Sergeant Bennett. See, sergeants can get away with that. Now, what do you think he taught that lieutenant?
Taught him a little lesson in military customs and courtesy.
Yeah. I mean, he taught him something. As a sergeant, that's what you do. You don't just teach people under you. You teach people over you as well. I mean, you're experienced. I remember as a sergeant instructor at OCS, we'd be out in the field, me and Staff Sergeant Bradley, he was a platoon sergeant, I was a sergeant instructor. We'd be out in the field, and during some slack time, we'd have a fire, and we'd have all the candidates around in a school circle, and we'd talk about what we did that day, whether it was defensive tactics or setting in a machine gun or doing this or doing that. And then we'd have a Q&A period. And I got asked this question more often than once. Somebody would say, candidate would stand up and says, my question is for Sergeant Bathurst. And I'd say, what is that, candidate? And he would say, sir, because they still had to call us sir.
Right.
He said, I'm going to graduate here soon, and I'm going to go out into the fleet. And I'm probably, if I'm lucky and I get the 0302 MOS, I'll be a platoon commander in an infantry company. And all of a sudden, my new platoon sergeant checks in, and it's Sergeant Bathurst. He said, how do I tell you what to do when you're the one that taught me everything I know? How do I tell you what to do? A very good question. And my answer to him was, you'll be a lieutenant, and I'll be a sergeant. You're my boss. But understand that, yes, I probably do know a hell of a lot more than what you do. But there's a hell of a lot of things that you know, having gone through the basic school, that I don't know. So remember that we both can learn from one another. I can continue to teach you, and you can teach me. So if I'm your platoon sergeant, when there's a decision to be made, you need to come to me and talk to me about it. And when I have a problem with a Marine, I may come to you and talk to you about it and get your opinion and your philosophy on it. I mean, sergeants rule. I mean, they are, I don't want to say they're God, but they're there where the rubber meets the road. And any sergeant that doesn't understand that and doesn't take advantage of it, but to do that, he's got to be tactically and technically proficient. He's got to set the example. He's got to know his men, know everything there is to know about them. You know, the old cliche that, you know, respect is a two-way street. You know, before you can receive it, you got to show it. And that's what sergeants do.
But that kind of wisdom, Jim, is what you're talking about. But again, it's more than that. It's taking that kind of smarts and bringing it to a group of younger Marines every day and teaching them and showing them the disciplined way that you have to live in order to translate that to the battlefield and have the best chance of everybody coming home. And that's I think that's the difficult part. Is sometimes guys lose focus of that, you know, and the challenge is constantly on a daily basis to one, make it enjoyable, two, make it challenging, and then look after them, take care of them and love them so that they get promoted. They get, you know, they get all the things that are supposed to happen. They happen for them. And that comes from, again, you can't fake it. You got to care about them. And I did a battle study with a friend of mine named Chris Bronzy. And he has a great quote. Love is more than an emotion. It's a responsibility. And I think and sergeants wear that because, as you said, they are the doers in the Marine Corps. And if your corporals and sergeants aren't doing it, then guess what? You have a unit that isn't doing it, and you're going to bleed more.
Absolutely.
You're going to bleed more when you go to war.
Absolutely.
You're going to bleed more.
A good friend of mine that I served at 8th and I with, he was a captain. In fact, he was our ceremonial guard company XO for a while. And I was a second lieutenant. He wrote a review on my book. And he said, he talked about, you know, love and everything else several times in the review. But he said something at the end of the review that just smacked me right in the forehead. He said, as Marines, we all know that we have loved more men than women. And that says it all. You gotta love them. I mean, you gotta love them. You know, they, you know, now somebody, you know, in this day and age, somebody might take that the wrong way.
Anybody who led knows. Anybody who led knows.
Now, yeah.
I mean, I'll give you an example. In, I want to say the next month, the stones are going in for the 5th Marine Regiment Vietnam Memorial. And what that is the Vietnam veterans of the 5th Marine Regiment saw pictures and got wind of the Memorial Garden at Camp San Mateo, where the 5th Marines are now headquartered. They then said, well, what the hell? We need to be in there. Okay, 50 years removed, okay? They've already got one wall.
Mm-hmm.
But they went and raised almost $400,000. And the wall, exactly, and the wall's going to be beautiful. Where does that come from?
Yeah.
It comes from the undying love of comrades that serve together, and it's going to be every Marine or sailor that was serving in the 5th Marine Regiment that was killed in Vietnam. $400,000 they've raised. And so, so that love is an undying love, and everybody knows who's gone forward. And I mean, whether you've gone forward or not, the Marines that you served with will have a special place in your heart forever. But, and so it is that love that motivates, but like a parent and a corporal and a sergeant, and I think your examples are great, and of the guard chief putting that guy in your section and saying, Bathurst, you're going to learn because you're going to do this every time you get promoted.
Yeah.
You're going to wind up being charged.
Oh, it happened. Oh, yeah. It happened time and time again throughout my career. You know, how do you turn a friend? And I mean, you know, how can you be a friend with a guy one day and be his leader the next? You know, I mean, that's a tough, tough decision to handle.
But let me tell you, Jim, you know, if you can lead, and you treat people with respect, and you're fair, and you give a shit about them. That's what matters. I mean, they'll look and they'll get it, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 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 But, yeah. It, it, you know, the sergeant is just, you know, God almighty, I had so much fun as a sergeant. I just, you know, you can laugh and joke with your Marines. You can even go out and have a few beers with them at the, you know, back in my day, we didn't have an NCO club. We just had an enlisted club, and back in my day at Quantico, we didn't have the Sergeant E5 then. You know, Sergeant was an E4. We didn't get the Sergeant E5 until July of 1959. They stuck in the Lance Corporal, and they moved it, then everybody moved up one. You know, a corporal used to be an E3. But he became an E4.
All right, let me ask you one more question as our hour comes to a close. If you could give corporals and sergeants one piece of advice to be better, what would that be?
Oh, Jesus. Well, it's the three M's that I learned a long time ago from a gunny. I don't know which one told me it, but mission, men, myself. You got a mission, and then you got men, and sometimes NCOs have a problem with that. They have a problem with mission versus men. Look out for the welfare of your men. But then you have this mission that you, and the mission might involve somebody getting hurt. Well, and let's put it in a combat scenario. You're going out on a platoon size patrol, and you know that your patrol is taking you into Indian country. You're probably going to get sniped at, and there's a good chance that this particular sniper may be a little bit better than the snipers before, and you know that you may get somebody hurt. Okay, that's your mission. So how you handle the next M, the men, looking out for the welfare of your men, is that they got their helmet strapped. They got their flak jacket closed. They spread out. You know, the old saying, one grenade gets you all. You know, the routes that you take, you apply the men part of it. You know, you got this mission, but you also got to look out for the welfare of your men. And you do that by being tactically and technically proficient. And knowing what the hell you're doing. I can remember many, many, many discussions with young lieutenants and NCOs when I was a staff NCO about, does welfare of your men ever come before your mission? No, it doesn't. But they can be equal. I mean, you can accomplish your mission and at the same time look out for the welfare of your men if you make them do what they're supposed to do, and to make sure that they're proficient and they're tactically proficient, and they do. You don't let them do stupid things. They know that you won't put up with stupid shit, and that goes back to the garrison environment. So I would say, mission, men, myself. You're last. You don't worry about yourself. You worry about your men. And you make sure that they know what the hell they're doing and they're proficient at what you're doing. I don't know.
That's exactly, what I'm looking for. And To me, you know, what you're saying is, you know, the job of an NCO of both corporals and sergeants is your job is to give those Marines what they need. It might always not be what they want, but that doesn't matter. You're supposed to be the person that knows better, the person that guides them, the person that mentors them, the person that teaches them to be what they need to be in order to step up and take your place. You're supposed to be that leader. And so, again, it's about giving them what they need, right? And it's not always what they want, but you're supposed to be the steadying hand on their shoulder, right? That guides them and shows you that this is the better way. And
and you know, at that same breath, you have to listen to your men.
Right.
You have to listen to your men. Listen to them. I mean, I had a point, in my platoon in Vietnam. His name was, he was a Lance Corporal, dark green Marine, was from North Carolina. His name was Albert Brigham. I swear, Brigham could smell a gooner. So anytime we were going down in the Indian country, Corporal Pelch knew that he was the lead squad because he knew I wanted Brigham up front. And, you know, I don't know how many times it's how we've gone through a bill at 0-200 in the morning, and all of a sudden the patrol would stop. And they'd give the signal, Sergeant B up. We had a hand and arm signals that we used, so we wouldn't talk. So I moved slowly through the platoon, and I'm behind the first squad, or behind Pelcher's squad, me and my radio operator. And I make my radio operator stay there, and I move up through there, and I go up, and I move up beside Brigham, and I'd say, what's wrong, Albert? I whisper in his ear, he'd say, I don't like it, Sergeant B. So what don't you like? There aren't any fires burning. There's no dogs barking. I'm sitting, I think about that. I said, are you telling me that you smell something? He goes, no, I don't smell them. And he said, I just feel uneasy. So you know what I do? We do an about face, we back up to the other edge of the bill, and we sit in a platoon-sized patrol base. I mean, you got to listen to him. I mean, if you know, I knew that this guy was it's again knowing your men. I knew that he had this sixth sense or whatever the hell you want to call it or anything else. You got to listen to him. You know, you can't be the hero and say, "Oh bullshit, Brigham, let's go, start moving." No, I'm not going to do that. Now, I might not be on the timeline that the S3 shop gave me to be at the other end of this bill to set in a patrol base there, but bullshit. I'm going to the back end of the bill and set in a patrol base. You know, I mean, you gotta love them, and you gotta listen to them, and they have to respect you that you're not gonna do something stupid, you know, to get a medal or to get, you know, praise from somebody. You know, I mean, there's so many. You say, what is the one thing? Shit, Mac, there's so many things that you can't boil it down to just one. You know, I mean.
No, but if you're and I agree with you because we're trying to distill leadership down into smaller bites, and we can talk about traits and we can talk about principles and all that. But I think you're getting your hands around it in that. Leadership's an art, okay? And where the rubber meets the road, the part that you play is, you know, the platoon commanders are going to meet with the company commanders. You're going to get issued warning orders. You're going to be told to get ready. They're going to come back. And there's a whole series of things that you got to do in order for when they say, all right, let's move, for it to be done the right way. And you've got to be, and you know what I mean? You are the tie rods that make that happen. And it's.
Absolutely.
Right.
Corporal Sarge.
Right. And very much like Mike, let me tell you, you know, it doesn't happen, you know, on the flight over. right? You've got to learn to do that. And I'll tell you what, I think your point about close order drill is a great point. I don't think Marines do enough of it anymore. It provides structured discipline and leadership. I remember when we came back from Afghanistan, Colonel Furness, Dave Furness, now Major General Furness, he said, look, if you go anywhere in groups larger than two, you'll march there. One Marine is marching marching the other one.
Absolutely.
You know, and then, absolutely. And then the other one was, if you PT between the hours of 06 and 1700, you'll be in your green-on-green PT gear, right? There is no rainbow PT during those hours. We're working, right? This is the Marine Corps. And it was just an effort to instill, right, some of that old Corps spirit, right, that we know works. We know works.
Yes.
We know works.
Yes, absolutely.
And all the things,
you know,
we've talked about, expect what you inspect. All those little things are things that keep people alive. They're not just chicken shit, you know, things that you've heard from the past. They are time-tested things. You know, the more you sweat in peacetime, the less you bleed in wartime. Time-tested. That didn't get made up yesterday.
Yes. And, you know, I've never been I'll never been, because I have been, you know, a cliche guy. But, you know, I used to have signs hanging around my offices. I know I've got somewhere. They were picture frames. And they were leadership cliches. Like, leadership is getting somebody to do something he'd rather not do and enjoy it. Now, think about that. You know, the gunny says there's going to be a squad. You know, the place looks like a shithole. We're going to clean this shit house up. We're having a field day tonight at 1800. So you go in as a platoon sergeant and say, we got a field day tonight. And everybody goes, oh. You know, and you know, and that means the brown baggers also, because they use the squad bay too. So brown baggers got to stay around with the meat beaters. And they got to do, you know, do the field day also. So you start doing, so I go back to the sergeant's quarters and somebody's got a radio there. And he's got it tuned into a rock and roll station, of course. So I turn on the radio and I turn it up blasting. You know? And the next thing you know, you got guys dancing with their frickin' broom. And their Schwab. You know? And they're dancing with a fucking broom. Yeah, like that. Ooh, watch this move, you know. And you get the squat, they cleaned up, and the next thing you know, it's cleaned up, and they enjoyed it.
Right.
You know, I mean, leadership is getting somebody to do something that he'd rather not do and enjoy it. You know.
Now, you know, Jim. Can I tell you? I'll tell you a quick little story along the same vein. What's the worst meal of the year to clean up after Thanksgiving? Right. There's more.
Oh yeah.
Oh my God. It's everything's a mess. So I would do the same thing with my kids, right? Bring the boom box out, turn it up, and turn it up loud. Where is everybody? Everybody's in the kitchen, laughing, snapping towels. Guess what? What are the highlights is at Thanksgiving now? Washing dishes afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Having a great time. And again, I will tell you one thing that it's okay to make it fun. And I don't care if you're doing squad tactics, it is okay to make it fun. It ought to be fun.
Yeah.
It ought to be fun. It ought to be challenging. And it's not very hard to do when you're doing things. And I tell the story of, trying to teach that lesson to, my weapons platoon commander one day. And, you know, he's a pretty serious lieutenant, and I said, and I was talking to him about it, it's got to be fun, and he said, well, you know, is our training serious? And I said, oh, no, it's serious. I said, but, you know, what do Marines exist to do? They exist to talk shit, right? I said, so watch, what are you guys doing? Well, the machine gunners are, we're doing gun drill. Machine gunners on the mortar section. I said, let's walk out there. So they're just kind of going through the motions out there, and I walked out there, and they see me as a company commander, and now they're kind of trying to fake like they're working hard, and
sure.
I said, watch this.
Yeah.
And I said, all right, section leaders, come here. I said, in 30 minutes, right, we're going to do two things. One, we're going to time to see who's the fastest, right? And somebody's going to win.
Competition.
And then after that, we're going head-to-head, and we're going to see who wins that. So 30 minutes, we'll be back. So he and I went, And now, now, what else did you have to say to the section leaders and the squad leaders? Nothing, right?
Yeah.
Now this is about shit talking rights in the barracks tonight and later on at Chow. So we go back in 30 minutes and we start racing. They're screaming and yelling, and then we go head to head, and that's when it got really interesting. And they were, you know, and they were pissed. And then what happened was afterwards, the teams that lost, their guys kept them out there. Let's do it again. And I looked at him and I said, look, it can be fun. Learning will occur. You'll identify the weak pieces. And if those weak pieces, if those NCOs don't take the corrective action, then you know the people you got to counsel. And all you got to do is get out of your way and let your staff NCO take care of that. And he just looked at me and he said, he looked at me and he said, thanks, sir. I said, no. You can have fun. And you can do all the things that you're supposed to do, and you'll make their lives better. And I said, competition for Marines, it's why they became Marines. They love to compete. So, never
so
ever forget
that. They can talk shit.
All right. Well, Jim, first of all, I can't tell you, I can't say thank you enough for coming back on and talking about, specifically about NCO leadership, where the rubber meets the road in the Marine Corps. And you're obviously, your life is replete with it, and can't say thank you enough.
Well, you're welcome. You're welcome. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Always enjoy talking to you, Max.
That is Jim Bathurst here on All Marine Radio. And more of this program coming up next. Don't touch your dial, because as good as Bathurst is talking about leadership, you're going to hear our battle study for today. And Jarvis Lynch, retired Major General, is going to take us back to 1968, and when he was the operations officer for 2nd Battalion, 22nd Marines. You can go to the website right now, and you can, if you want to bomb the map up on a screen as you listen, but there's two things that have been posted to the website right now. One is a map of the operation that he'll talk about. Two is an article that he wrote called The Dead Went Last, and both are on the website right now, and so you can go check them out. And you know, if you read the article, it's a good one. There's actually two articles in the PDF file that's there, and the map is it will help you understand what he's talking about. So with that said, we'll take a quick break. And Major General Jarvis Lynch, who was a major during this operation, OPSO of 2nd Battalion, 26th Marines, who are the only other, other than fighting in Vietnam, the only other battle that they ever fought in was the Battle of Iwo Jima. So 26th Marines, storied regiment in Marine Corps history, and you'll hear from him as the third installment of our battlefield studies happens today. We'll go to Vietnam. Next week we'll go to Sangin in Afghanistan. So I'm loving this segment, honestly. The guys that come on are great, and the thing they have in all of them have in common is they want other people to learn from their experience. And their experiences are as vivid for them today as they were when they happened. And they're passionate about them, and it's the interviews are great. So don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.